And welcome to another episode of Inside the Helmet, although maybe we should call this Inside the Office, Inside the Boardroom, I don't know. I'm joined by the king of the Mazda Road to Indy, as Anders Krohn had so eloquently crowned you, Jason Penix of IndyCar. Jason, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Doug. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
We had some rather interesting things happen here in 2013. Right at the end of 2012, of course, Rodriguez had announced that he was going to hang it up for Star Mazda. Dan Anderson steps in, comes to the rescue, so to speak, and takes over that series as the Pro Mazda Championship. It was light this year, but man, did we see some fantastic driving from Diego Ferreira and especially Matthew Brabham, who just trounced all over everyone. But we also saw some changes in that series right off the bat, coming in with Cooper tires. Jason, give me your assessment on how you felt this inaugural Pro Mazda Championship went under the new ownership of Dan Anderson.
Sure. No, I think you touched on it. I mean, Matthew Brabham certainly had a stranglehold on the field this season. It didn't start out that way, but he quickly found his way in the series and took care of business. And, super proud of what he was able to do. From a series standpoint, you mentioned it, a little lighter than we would like. On the car counts at the races, but I think a lot of that is just due to the timing of the transition from Gary Rodriguez over to Dan Anderson and his group. And I think as we look towards 2014, we'll see some growth out of that Pro Mazda field. The guys that were with us this year seem to really like it, seem to like the direction of the series. So I think we're all very hopeful that we'll see some growth there in 2014.
Well, of course, one of the reasons I think that the Star Mazda was starting to wane was costs, the operation costs, not necessarily the cost of the initial chassis, but the tire contracts and the engines and all that. It seems like Anderson worked really hard to address those issues. Was that something he was able to really kind of rein in within a single year? Or where are we on the operation costs in Pro Mazda?
Yeah, I think he was able to accomplish that in the first year. Partnering with Cooper Tires certainly was an advantage. They had great experience in USF 2000, and were stepping right up to the plate to get involved in Pro Mazda for the 2013 season. And so there were some efficiencies there for the teams on the tire side. Speed Source Engines did the engine program for Pro Mazda. Again, I think they really came in and cleaned up a lot of the issues, whether those were real issues or perceived issues that were out there for Pro Mazda, and did a nice job of giving everyone a fair competition and fair products throughout the year. And I think that really helped bring some equivalency to the field. And, I think that we can see even more of that as we look towards 2014. Again, going back to the late start that Dan and the Anderson Promotions team got on the series, in 2013, that really did them no favors, obviously, right? So
right.
I think if we look towards 2014, we can continue to see that growth in every aspect. That certainly includes, car count, but it also includes the help of those manufacturers like Cooper Tire and Speed Source Engines.
Well, now speaking of car count, we have some teams in Pro Mazda that have historically run more cars than they did this year, but we have also had more teams. Are we looking at 2014 a return of some of the teams that used to be in the series, or perhaps some new ones, that, or are we still too early? What are you seeing on your end in terms of new blood coming to 2014?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit early still here at the end of October to figure out who all is going to come and play. Kind of the inside joke here, across the board with all series, is that in October, everybody thinks that they're going to have all of their seats filled, right? So it's a little tough to tell. I will say that the guys that we had involved this year, all did a fantastic job. I think everyone seemed very happy, and there's no reason to think they won't be back. And then, looking ahead to 14, we certainly hope to see old teams come back in and current teams possibly expand if that's an option.
One of the things that came to my mind as soon as the Maserati Indy program was established back in what 2010 was the potential advantage of having a development not just for the series as a whole, but for teams individually. And we see some teams that have programs across the different levels of the Maserati Indy. Of course, Andretti stands out most strongly. They're being involved at every step. But from your standpoint, from an operations and the health of the series and program standpoint, how important is it to have teams with multiple programs throughout the four various series?
Oh, I think it's super important. It's not only a good thing for young drivers to have, additional opportunities and seats coming into these series, but it's a fantastic thing for the teams as well. I mean, we really, as you touched on, Andretti obviously is the prime example of a team that has cars at every level. But we have other teams, Brian Herta, Autosport. They've got the IndyCar program and an Indy Lights program. Juncos Racing has the Pro Mazda program and Indy Lights program. So we have a few of those examples, but we certainly look to expand that if we can. And I think I shouldn't say the easiest expansion, but probably the most realistic expansion for a lot of these IndyCar teams is to look at Indy Lights. And I think, we're hopeful that we might see a small uptick in that for the 2014 season. But when we roll out a new car in 2015, that's going to be where the heavy marketing comes to these teams to come on board and try to, come to the plate with incentives and things that these teams can take advantage of and really broaden their base and get involved in the whole Road to Indy program.
I do want to talk about the 2014, 20, and especially the 2015 changes that are coming in Indy Lights. But before we get to that, I want to go down to the first step on the Maserati Indy ladder and talk a little bit about USF 2000. This is a series that has had really an amazing amount of support, good grid, and healthy participation. We've seen some really nice battles, and we saw another very good one this year between the Cape Motorsports teammates, Neil Aburico and Scott Hargrove. The thing that stands out to me for USF 2000 is, of course, it started out with this dichotomy, right? We have the championship class and then the national class. Last year, there was a huge influx of national class drivers, and I think that was in part due to the inclusion of the Formula Enterprise, the FCCA Formula Enterprise chassis. I kind of expected another kind of even split, but this year it seemed everybody was flocking to the championship class. What's the future of the national class for USF 2000?
Yeah, we've really evaluated that, and I think collectively have come to the decision, along with some of the partners in that class, that we're actually going to discontinue the national class, starting with this 2014 season. A variety of factors go into that, but you touched on the more of the surge in popularity with the championship class, and the national class certainly was a fantastic class and did what it was supposed to do, and really helped. Help swell our grids early on. But I think as we look at the series and the competitive nature, especially of that championship class, more than a solid foundation is there to allow that to kind of run on its own. And so, all things considered, we took a hard look at it and decided that was the best course of action for us.
So with the inclusion of the national class, you're often up near 30 cars per grid. Taking that away and moving just with the championship class, and I guess this is going to happen as soon as 2014. Are you okay with a mid-20s grid? Is that what you would feel is a healthy grid size at this level?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, when you hit 30, that's always a nice round, big number to go out and talk about. But I think, this year we saw a lot of car counts in the mid to upper 20s, and I think we're comfortable with that. Also, with having just the championship class out there now, obviously everyone's running the same package, it's a fair assessment across the board for everyone. And so, I think that. I think we're looking forward to that championship class. Obviously, we had a heck of a battle this year with the Cape teammates, and looking forward to what we can do for 2014.
Well, this year, for the first time, we ran a triple header at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, which for those of us watching, oh, it was great seeing seeing all that on-track action. What did the teams think of that? Was it a pretty hard thrash to make those three races?
Well, I think if you're fortunate and don't have any issues over the course of the weekend, whether it be mechanical or incidents, it's a great thing, right? You can be out there three different times racing on an IndyCar weekend. That's a big deal for those guys. And certainly there's challenges if you do have incidents, and we recognize that, and we try to do what we can to help there. The most important thing in all of this, especially at the USF 2000 level, is a triple header provides tremendous amount of seat time for these young drivers, and really that's what it's all about. It's no secret that we have drivers that are funding their own careers in some fashion, and so for them to go out and get the most bang for their buck and to go out and get experience, why not have three races, especially on a big time event weekend, when you can? And so we deem it a success, and we'll be doing it again next year at Mid-Ohio.
Well, you touched on something else I wanted to bring up, and that is the exposure of these young drivers to their potential future bosses. And in the past, most of the Maserati Indy races, whether it was USF 2000 Pro Mazda or Indy Lights, had always been held in conjunction with IndyCar. They are also sometimes with Grand Am or a standalone, say up at Trois-Rivières. But this year, or this coming year, 2014, all of the Maserati Indy events will be held in support of the IndyCar events. Was that some feedback you got from the team, or was that something that was decided at the leadership level, or where did the decision to only have the races in front of the in support of IndyCar come about?
It's always been our goal to have all of the events with IndyCar. It just didn't always work out perfectly from a scheduling standpoint. And you got to remember that when you look at the USF 2000 and Pro Mazda levels, especially, we really can't run anything larger than a mile when it comes to ovals. And then, certainly in some places, take Long Beach, for example, they've done it the same way there for many, many years, and that weekend's already jam-packed, and so you're not going to get another series on there. So that led to some of those things in the past. But now we're at a point where, not only the teams and the drivers, but also the promoters and tracks that we work with are used to this package now, and they find value in it. They can bring in the whole Maserati Indy program. It's entertaining. It obviously is great for these young drivers. If you're involved in this program, then, at least right now in their careers, we consider everybody future IndyCar drivers, right? That's what they're all aspiring to be. So, all of those things combined led to the decision to try to continue to push towards all IndyCar weekends. And fortunately, we were able to do that for the 2014 season.
Well, one of the things that, of course, some of the long-term fans, us hardcore curmudgeons, are always
Me
railing about,
included, yeah.
is oval racing, right? We love the oval racing. Give us more oval racing. Well, here we're dropping some of the ovals from all three of the schedules for 2014. The USF 2000 Series will be at Lucas Oil Raceway, or IRP, as of course I will always remember it.
Sure.
For the night before the 500. Pro Mazda will be at the night before the 500 as well, but also at Milwaukee Mile, but that's the only two ovals for them. And the Indy Lights, thankfully, I'm happy that they are keeping this, still going to be racing on Carburation Day. Is it still going to be called the Freedom 100?
Yeah, it'll still be the Freedom 100. Nothing
Okay.
changes there. Certainly still our hallmark event. So,
And then at Pocono and at Milwaukee Mile. So we've got three ovals for Indy Lights, two for Pro Mazda, one for USF 2000. I know a lot of the fans are going to be, they're going to have some things to say about this, but explain to us why, from an operation standpoint, that this makes sense, or from a development of racecraft standpoint, it might make sense.
yeah, I think, really it's twofold for us, Doug. First, you have to look at budgets for teams and what's going on there and try to help them as much as you can. And when you race on ovals or more than a few ovals, budgets go up, right? The cost to hit the wall is a lot more expensive at an oval than it is at a road course, traditionally speaking. And the second part of that is drivers, not only here in the US, but also in Europe, look at the series. And I'm primarily speaking about Indy Lights because that's where we're seeing the most significant change. And really, aren't that favorable with the oval package. You know, they recognize that, one, if they crash, it's going to be big, most likely, in terms of crash damage. And two, quite frankly, there was a little concern of injury on their part, too. So, you know, we're trying to build up the value of this series and look at ways that we can help teams go out and sell themselves to these young drivers. And so as we look at it, we thought this was something we needed to do, at least for the short term. Speaking from an Indy Lights standpoint, we'll still have three fantastic ovals. We'll have a short oval challenging circuit in the Milwaukee Mile. Like I touched on, we'll certainly keep our Freedom 100 event at IMS. That is, you know, the cornerstone of our series, biggest event of the year. And then we'll go back to Pocono, which, it's a big track. It's over 2 miles. It is demanding, challenging, and they don't call it the tricky triangle for nothing, right? So
that's right.
It takes a whole different skill set to be there. So we still feel pretty comfortable with what we've got in terms of the oval package we're offering.
I was really happy with the three ovals that were selected because you can't get rid of IMS. That is such a magical race there on Carburation Day. In fact, I should be getting a kickback from you guys for how many people I've gotten to come to Carburation Day after telling them about the Freedom 100. But anyway, the Milwaukee Mile, a flat 1 mile oval, tough oval to drive, really dispels a lot of misconceptions about what oval racing is. And of course, Pocono is Pocono, and it's very, very unique, and certainly a driving challenge, just not just a put your foot on the floor and go type of track. Well, with Indy Lights, now let's come back and look at Indy Lights in 2014. The past few years, and especially this year, we've struggled to get cars on track. With the announcement of Dan Anderson taking over the operations, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not the ownership of the series. IndyCar still owns the series, but Anderson Promotions is taking hold of the operations. Is that right?
You are correct, yes.
Okay. With Anderson involved with the operations of Indy Lights now, I've been seeing a lot more optimism about 2014. But, as you say, in October, everyone is, we fully intend to run a full season with three cars.
Right.
We joked around on our podcast that Open Paddock is, we have intentions to enter the Formula One, Formula One season. All we're looking for is money.
Exactly.
But from a realistic standpoint, how much of this is just enthusiastic optimism and how much is legit? What level of increase? I mean, because I'm positive we're going to see some, but just what level of increase in participation are we looking for in 2014?
Well, I'll answer the first part of it first here. I think, the series needed a shot in the arm. That's no, there's no hiding that.
Right.
And Dan came in and obviously he's out there talking about the series, which helps. And he quickly laid out a plan to help contain costs for teams, hopefully, and to upgrade this car as much as we can and equalize things as much as we can to create an environment in which drivers are going to want to come here and compete. But obviously I have a great story to tell from a scholarship standpoint. We're the only racing series in the world that has a program like the Mazda Road to Indy, and we have seen that track record of drivers graduating from Indy Lights to IndyCar, not just our champions, but I mean, you can go through the list.
Oh, Newgarden, sure.
ODA, now we have Karam that's trying to find his way into IndyCar, Hinchcliffe, Kimball, the list goes on and on. So we're really proud of that. And I think, Dan's out there, he's a new storyteller for us, right? And,
mm-hmm.
We look at the package, we have Cooper Tires coming in this year. Firestone, very longstanding partner with the series, was a tremendous partner. But, things change, and now Cooper's involved. We've been extremely proud of what they've been able to accomplish at the USF 2000 and Pro Mazda levels. They're a fantastic partner, not only in the product that they produce, but they also are a great partner from a marketing and activation standpoint. That's going to help the series, and it also lowers costs for the teams from a tire standpoint. We look at dampers. We're upgrading that package for this year with a new spec damper. So we'll integrate that. That'll also carry over, as will the Cooper tires, to the new car in 2015. So we have this package out there, that we're able to update this 2014 or the car for this 2014 season. And I think at this point now it's, you know, going out and continuing to preach the message and the plan for what we have. We've just launched a new marketing campaign. We just started with Autosport Magazine, and we launched our first ad in this most recent issue, and are coming up here on our second one. So a lot of things are happening. We have some online advertising we're going to do as well. So between, you know, marketing and advertising and the package that we have, and obviously folks like yourself from the media standpoint that are helping us get the message out, we really hope to see and are frankly starting to see an uptick in the interest. You know, as I talk to teams, Indy Lights teams, majority of them are telling me, hey, I haven't had this much interest at this time of year in a long, long time. And these are guys that have been around the series for quite some time. So that's all exciting to hear. The second question you asked about, you know, what's a realistic bump or you know, increase for cars. You know, for me personally, I won't be satisfied unless we're out there running with 14 full-time entrants in 2014. In addition to that, I hope we will see, like we did this year, some occasional bumps in that, bumps up, you know, maybe it's 15, 16, 17 cars. We'd love to see, you know, 18 or more at the Freedom 100 if we can. So trying to be realistic in the fact that this is still a series that we're trying to reshape and grow. So I don't want to come out and say, oh, I expect to have 25 cars. I don't think that's realistic. But I do think, you know, shooting for 14, maybe even 16, you know, is realistic for us. And, you know, we touched on it earlier. Everybody's got a full boat for the 2014 season this time of year. We'll see where it nets out, but I am encouraged by what I'm hearing from all the teams.
What have you been hearing from the teams in terms of their reaction to the expansion of Winterfest? Because now Winterfest has always been a kind of a key part of USF 2000, but now it's going to involve both Pro Mazda for a couple of races at each venue. And also some testing time for Indy Lights. Will this help keep the overall testing costs down for the individual teams, having all the series on track there on the same weekend, or was this more for a promotional thing, or what was the thinking behind that?
Well, there are efficiencies there for sure for the teams. You know, if we roll into a track, and we'll take New Orleans for an example. With the Winterfest for USF 2000, now we add Pro Mazda to that, now we add Indy Lights testing to that, it does get a little cheaper for teams, not only for those that are bringing cars from multiple series, but for everyone, really, when you consider they're sharing the track with more, and there's more ways to slice up the pie, if you will. So that's one part of it. You know, second, you know, testing as a whole, including this Winterfest and then and the testing that goes on there for Indy Lights, you know, it's important. We have new dampers, we have new tires, and we got to get out there and try them, right? You know, we have to go out and see what they have, and it's an opportunity for teams and drivers to evaluate those and learn a little bit about them. So it's important from that those two standpoints for sure. You know, I think from a team standpoint, it also keeps them busy in the off season, right? And I think as we look at, you know, the upcoming 2014 condensed calendar or condensed time span in which the schedule will take place, I think it is even more important to have some strong off-season testing programs at the junior level. And so we're excited to see how it goes this year.
Well, one last little topic to discuss before we sign off, and that is I do want to talk about 2015 and this new Indy Lights chassis. It's been talked about for a long time. We're using a pretty old chassis. It's a good chassis, but it's an old chassis now. And there was a bid out at one point, and the decision was reversed kind of at the 11th hour, it felt like to a lot of us. How has the manufacturer reaction been to a 2015? Are we going to require full new bids, or are they going to be able to use the bids that they had prepared before?
I think, you know, Dan's a sharp guy, and you know, he was aware of the process that we went through here at IndyCar when we tried to launch a new car for the 2014 season. And obviously, as he got more involved, you know, in the series and eventually now operating the series, mm-hmm. you know, he wanted to take a stab at that for 15, and we will have the new car for 15. It's many of the same players that we had involved in the 2014 RFP process. I think everybody's embraced it and come back and said, okay, let's do this thing, right? And so I've been extremely pleased both with the 2014 new car process that we went through on the IndyCar side, and also now on the new 2015 car for Indy Lights. I've been extremely pleased with the level of response that we've had across the board, not just chassis, but also engines and really just suppliers of all parts and pieces that make these cars up. For a series that we're trying to reinvigorate and relaunch, it's been really nice to see the support and the level of interest to get involved with it. It's been great.
You know, speaking of the engines, we've been running an unbadged engine for a while now, since Infiniti parted ways. As you look towards a 2015 engine, is that going to be a new architecture? Are there some manufacturers that have expressed any interest in badging or developing an engine for Indy Lights?
Yeah, I think both, really, Doug. We've had interest, obviously from a new engine technology standpoint. We've had interest in badging, and so I feel confident that we'll have a great package to offer up. We're still, finalizing both chassis and engine right now, and hope to have those things wrapped up here in the near future. But I am confident that we'll have a package that will really help boost the series, and also help our teams and drivers and stakeholders really have something to go out and talk about as we go out and try to find sponsorship and get support for this thing. It's really encouraging, and we're super excited about the direction we're going.
Well, there is a little bit of rumor. I hate to even elevate it to the level of rumor. There are some thoughts that I saw fly by across the interwebs about potentially having engine competition in Indy Lights. Any truth to that, or is that just something barking up the wrong tree?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. I don't know that there's much truth to that. I think when you're dealing with a junior Formula Series, you have to keep costs in line, and part of that is being as spec as you can be, within reason. And I think engines certainly fall within that category. So unless something's changed that I'm not aware of, I think we'll be moving forward with a spec package.
I wondered about that as I saw it fly by. I'm like, that didn't sound right for a junior formula. But weird things have happened. So well, looks like we're on track for 2015, and looking forward to a few more cars in 2014. And a pretty darn good schedule. So, Jason, thank you very much for talking to us.
No problem at all, Doug. Like I said earlier, it's always a pleasure to speak with you guys. You do a fantastic job of covering our sport, especially the junior formula side of it. So we really appreciate that.
All right, Ed, we'll see you at the track next year.
Sounds great. See you there.